Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com, one of our most basketball-heavy podcasts of the year. Tim Priester back from New York, the ACC tournament. Notre Dame makes a run to the final before falling to Duke, and then Sunday night draws a 5 seed. So why don't we talk Brooklyn real quick before we get into the 5 seed and spinning it all the way forward into Notre Dame against Princeton on Thursday in Buffalo, as Tim Priester will be making that scenic drive through Northeast Ohio and then upstate New York, I guess. Brooklyn, on our last podcast we talked about, we didn't expect them to make it past Virginia, but we thought if they did, they would make it to right. Saturday night, which they did. But I didn't think that in doing so they would have played as well as they did, really in 3 games, because I would include Duke as you played really, really well. I mean, you were there in Barclays Arena. What was the vibe there around Notre Dame, Bray in particular?
Well, you look at 120 minutes of basketball. They played great basketball for about 90 or 100 of them. I mean, that was a really, really good basketball team, especially against Virginia and Florida State. Duke exposed them at a certain point, but they made a run, took a lead, had an 8-point lead. Is that when Farrell took the three when they were up 8? Which is a good shot for him, because you want him, trying to put a dagger into them at that point. But they did a lot of good things. To me, the most surprising thing, and I know Virginia's offense is not what it was with Malcolm Brogdon and Anthony Gill, but their defense was great against Virginia. Bray worked in a 1-2-2, which is a little twist, and it made it difficult for Florida State to get the ball in the middle, which they didn't want that to happen to Jonathan Isaac.
Florida State had no clue.
Yeah, they didn't. But, they didn't want Isaac getting the ball in the middle of the lane. He shot 2 for 7. So, I mean, defensively, they did great. At a certain point, I think the intensity and the playing 3 straight nights caught up to them. I know Duke was playing for a 4th straight night, but those are more elite athletes and basketball players.
We talked about this before the podcast, but Duke right now is the equivalent of Notre Dame having Bonzi Colson being the best player in the ACC, which was, either he or Luke Kennard for my money this season, and then having a guy better than Bonzi Colson all of a sudden on Notre Dame. That's what Duke has with Jason Tatum. So they have the second best player in the ACC all year, and now they have the best player who's going to be the number 1 pick in the draft. It is the biggest trade-up. I mean, Duke exposed Notre Dame for not being an NBA team, basically.
And you have Grayson Allen hitting, he's a great shooter. You have Matt Jones hitting a big three. You have Jackson hitting a big three.
Matt Jones is the only guy on that team you wanted shooting that. Yeah. He nailed it. He was 2 of his previous 19, and he drills it. I mean, it's just, you have credit to Duke, right?
Yeah, I found it interesting that, and I was also at the North Carolina-Duke game, which is, that's an event. And the fans treat it as such. But, man, the North Carolina fans travel much better than the Duke fans. That was clearly a partisan Tar Heel crowd for that game. Yet when it was Duke and Notre Dame, I don't know where the Duke fans came from all of a sudden, but maybe because Notre Dame has like a section of about 25 people over there behind the bench. And that's basically about it.
Remember when they won it and the people are staying behind the bench when they won it 2 years ago? I have a picture that captures the whole Notre Dame section, and it's all North Carolina. And that's just what happens when they travel these things. It's the opposite for football, but then it gets the opposite result usually too.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get Duke fans to show up on the afternoon. They're working in their hedge funds and law offices. Right. So, I mean, Saturday night, they're available. I mean, Duke, you're bringing Harry Giles, ESPN's #1 overall player, off the bench.
Versus Martin Gibbons. He's just scratching the surface of what he's going to be.
They have a lot of beautiful basketball players, Duke. And I thought Notre Dame did a great job with them. I think that really would have been one of Bray's best coaching job in a 3-year run of best coaching jobs. I mean, it's amazing to me with that loss in the postseason. They're 12-4 the last 3 years. Their losses are Kentucky, North Carolina, and Duke.
Yeah, you point that out.
The previous 14 years, Bray was 16-23.
Old Dominion.
Well, he commented about that.
State.
Yeah. I mean, he commented about that last night and just flat out admitted that he said early on, I was too tight for games. I negatively impacted my team in postseason play. Now he goes by loosest coach in America, and he's really pulled back, and he was that way again. I went to practice on days are mixed up now. Wednesday, I guess, John Jay College, and he was loose, and his team really, really goes for it. I'm not shocked that they beat Virginia, But I'm shocked at how much great basketball they played during those three games.
Yeah, it was fun to watch them. And that's, I think, the way a lot of people on the message board are reacting is, how far can they go? I don't know, because I kind of feel like it's the Virginia game. This Princeton game, I know it's a, you can't ask really for a better draw to draw Princeton, a team that Notre Dame can actually out-athlete and out-play on the basketball court. But if you remember a couple years ago, man, Northeastern had the ball and a chance to win with 20 seconds left. And that's what's going to happen in this game. And if you can get past this game, West Virginia likes to press you, and Notre Dame can beat the press and have open shots. They got to hit them. Of course, they would have beat Duke had they hit open shots.
There's literally, no doubt about it. There were three shots from my seat across from the Notre Dame bench. When they were winning, there were shots by Farrell, Beecham, and Vastoria that were online. I thought they were all three were going, and they didn't. And once that happened, you know, Duke started running a little bit.
You mentioned being tight. They're only going to be tight one more game this year, and it's Thursday. Because they will be play loose against what they're going to be an underdog if it's West Virginia. Mm-hmm. They're going to be an underdog if it's Gonzaga. They're going to be an underdog if it's Arizona. They might be an underdog if it's Florida State for some reason. I would love to see Florida State down the line again. They have no idea.
No, they really don't. Well, they're young. Boy, you should have heard Leonard Hamilton's comments.
It came through on the TV.
Okay. It was loud and clear in the arena as well.
I was like, oh, God, he was really upset.
Yeah, he was very unhappy. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I don't get all caught up in seeds and stuff. When people were saying, well, Notre Dame might be a 3, I knew that wasn't going to happen. I thought they'd be a 4.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter, because the 4 and 5 play in game 2 anyway. But why in the world is Florida State a 3 and Notre Dame a 5?
Did you hear what Jay Billis said about that game? During the game?
No, I did not.
He said, it's like you're watching the guys that are on their lunch break.
Yes.
They went down to the park and just destroyed the high school kids because the guys on their lunch break know how to play. Tremendous line.
Yeah.
I immediately got a text from my old roommate in Atlanta who's a Florida State grad. It's like, I'm ashamed how much I agree with that.
But I'm trying to understand why Florida State gets a 3, because you look at non-conference schedule. Okay, they play Temple, Illinois, Minnesota, and Florida. Well, Notre Dame played, you know, Northwestern and Colorado, Villanova and Purdue. Florida State was 3-6 in the conference on the road. They were 9-0 home, 3-6 on the road. I almost felt like because there was a site in Orlando, they were bound and determined to get Florida State there, and they made them a 3. I don't have any other explanation for that.
It makes no sense to me. I mean, you look at the overall seeds, like 1 through 68, Florida State is 10.
That's crazy.
Florida State was the 10th best team in the country.
I don't know what it's based on. They had the same. They were in a 3-way tie for second.
That is ridiculous. They didn't get that much better of a situation than Notre Dame, because, I mean, you have either Xavier or Maryland in the second round. That's not that much different than, I mean, Bucknell could beat West Virginia, as Pete has pointed out. Notre Dame's second round is opened up for them, or second round last year, and Sweet 16 the previous year. I don't know. I don't know if Arizona's. I know Gonzaga deserves a number one seed, but would you rather play Arizona or Gonzaga in the
Sweet
16?
There's no doubt.
I don't think it really hurt them. As I said, it's just I think Notre Dame fans are going to be frustrated Thursday, and I don't think it's not a unique situation. There's going to be a lot of teams that play tight games.
Yeah.
I think Thursday's bad. I agree with what Mike Bray said. I hope we have Friday.
It is. Yeah, Princeton played Sunday, yeah. But it's almost like when you go through what Notre Dame went through with the three late nights – In the late one on Saturday, Princeton playing on Sunday. I think it's
Princeton didn't chase Jason Tatum around.
Right. It's a wash. And as I said when I got back from New York, New York's hard, man. New York's hard on everybody. Anybody that's there for the tournament for whatever reason, it's hard. And it was hard on the Notre Dame players.
Best story is more tired than you, probably.
Yeah.
Well,
he ain't 56.
That's why I think this all hand wringing over the seed. The start time is a bigger deal than Notre Dame's seed, because you have Bonzi Colson's foot and ankle and how that's doing, because that is going to have a lot to do with how far Notre Dame might be able to go. And you know, having an extra day is a real material thing that's going to help you feel better.
I saw him last night. I mean, he seems to be okay. He was limping. He was going to get treatment. They were going to have him in a boot for the next at least 24 hours. Which is just precautionary. You know, I think everything's going to be okay there. Certainly, you know, he's going to be right there, and he's a warrior. And, when he went down, I never saw the replay of it. I heard it looked
pretty
ugly.
Yeah.
Like, But they said it was a twist, not a sprain. I don't know if you can you differentiate that for me, because I don't know. But he did come back pretty quickly. He left the bench and he never did go all the way back to the locker room.
Yeah,
he just
ran laps or something.
But he only scored 3 points after that.
Boy, it was a shot though.
It was a shot.
That was beautiful. That's what I thought they actually might pull that one out.
Yeah, just some tournament history. I think the last time I remember Notre Dame playing the first game of the tournament was the New Orleans game against Old Dominion, where they were asleep from start to finish. They've been a 5 seed twice under Mike Bray. One was 2003 when they went to the Sweet 16, beat Illinois. And the other one, they beat George Mason and then lost to Washington State with Tony Bennett by 20 points.
Well, I was at that one in Denver, and you want to talk about an ugly performance. That was awful. But, you know, and you're right, Pete, but I mean, don't you think they're beyond that?
Oh,
I mean, they're not
going to
sleepwalk.
I think they're totally beyond that. I do think, and this is a point that O'Malley has made a bunch, and I think it is worth repeating when you look at Notre Dame and think, well, of course they're going to advance because Notre Dame wins in the tournament now. They were down 12 at half to Michigan last year. After that, they needed those steals. They beat Stephen F. Austin, which they got a huge break from beating West Virginia. And then they needed those steals against Wisconsin very late, which were just crazy plays. The year before, the Northeastern game, which we've already referenced, Butler was overtime, if I'm not mistaken.
Pat Connaughton, flying block shot. Yes. And you know that shot's going in, too. So, but Butler in a tournament game.
Yeah, and really one of the key results in recent Notre Dame NCAA tournament history was actually Wichita State beating Kansas in the second round, because instead of getting Kansas in the Sweet 16, Notre Dame got Wichita State and murdered
them. No doubt about it. And West Virginia's not going to get upset 2 years in a row in this scenario. So if you win, you're going to have to play West Virginia, and that's going to be
so that line
40 minutes of pressing.
Overnight.
Which line? West Virginia and Bucknell?
Bucknell. Yeah.
Someone knows something, Tim.
Well, that's true. Ryan Ayers has the, if they play Bucknell, Ryan Ayers has the scouting report for Bucknell.
That's
He's
right.
quite familiar
that's
with that.
Yeah. Totally, I mean, these are the seeds Notre Dame has knocked out in the last 2 years. 7-11, 14, 6, 14, and 7.
But they almost knocked out the best regular season team in the last
And they lost by 2 to Kentucky.
Right.
Against a just ridiculous team. I mean, their losses, what I referenced earlier, it's Kentucky. All-time great team that did not win the tournament. North Carolina twice, which pretty much had the tournament won last year. And then Duke last year, which I most people would say is one of the hottest teams going into the tournament right now. So it's the tournament. Why do we love it? Because you don't know what the heck's going to happen. Notre Dame's been on the right side of that the last 2 years. Can they be on the right side of that for 3 years? I think they're in as good position as it could be.
I mean, there's no doubt. Their mindset.
You look at some of those Notre Dame teams, the Old Dominion loss and the Washington State loss, the Iowa State loss. They were limping through the conference tournament. They were really lagging in March at the end of the regular season. This team is not doing that.
Iowa State looked like 6-on-4.
Oh,
it was really,
that was awful.
Really bad. That was when I think it hit the fan, too, for fans,
Xavier
for Notre Dame.
The Xavier game when you had Lehigh in the second round waiting for you. This team just feels like it's got the operation and the engine running in a way that those teams didn't. So, this team feels a lot more like the last 2 years than
But I'm here to tell you, that was one tired group of dudes last night.
That's why I think the only possible tightness in a game is when Notre Dame and Princeton are tied with 8 minutes left. I think Notre Dame and West Virginia are tied with 8 minutes left. Everyone in the world thinks Notre Dame's going to pull that game out. Yeah. And if Notre Dame and Gonzaga are tied with 8 minutes left, that's also a good case scenario for Notre Dame. It's this one you got to kind of
I have a question.
Past.
Does Princeton ever run something other than the Princeton offense?
Should they?
I think it's just called offense.
Yeah, it's just called offense there.
All right, well, that's it for segment one on Irish Illustrated Insider. We got a bunch of questions. Some hoops, some football recruiting, and some obvious spring practice stuff, even though Notre Dame's on spring. So all that next, segment two, Irish Illustrated Insider.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. We start with a question from Griswold06. Let's assume that the latest strength and conditioning staff change is the real deal. Are strength and conditioning developments that translate to meaningful on-field results measured in months or years?
Their offensive line's not starting from scratch. No. I mean, they can certainly look much better than they did last year. I mean, the defensive line, I don't think, is starting from scratch either. I'm not sure if it's going to be a stout defensive line, but nothing to do with the strength and conditioning issues. It's just if their talent level will be good enough on that side. But the offensive line was plenty good 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is a quote from Greer Martini. Our first workout of the year was harder than any workout I went through my previous 3 years here. So it definitely is different. Are they going to throw the Georgia defensive line around? Probably not. Could they be better in the fourth quarter? Do they have a little bit better mental toughness? They better. I mean, that the season's not going to work out if they don't. So I think it's the issue, and the positive for Notre Dame is more of a toughness thing than a strength thing necessarily, if that makes sense.
I think it does. I think it's a stamina issue in the fourth quarter as well. You can make up a lot of ground in a short period of time if you're doing things the right way with strength and conditioning. And I think that they'll do that. I agree. I don't think that, they're not starting from scratch. They did win. They won 10 games two seasons ago. And it was the same strength and conditioning coach. But, hey, it's all a positive. And when the players are tweeting it out and responding to it, nobody knows better than them, the positive steps that they're taking.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Nebraska has the back-to-back Elite Eights equaled recruiting success for men's basketball.
I think it would have. The loss in the Kentucky defeat was, obviously, everybody was devastated by it. That's one of the few basketball defeats of the last 40 years that knocked down the Notre Dame fan base for more than one day, was the fact that I think a win over Kentucky in a Final Four would have equaled recruiting success. And I think that it was that big of a deal had they been able to beat them on that stage instead of just being the most memorable loss in the last couple of years. That's the one that would have moved the needle, I think, completely.
Yeah, and there's a win of that magnitude. This is really a question I asked Mike Bray a few weeks ago, and he's not suddenly going to start recruiting five-star players. He can't run his system with those type of players, selfish players. Not all five-stars are selfish, but
you're right.
They come from a different background with a different mindset. He said, he talked about, and he said it this way, the dreaded three-star player. He's making fun of the fact that, just because a guy's listed as a three-star doesn't mean that he can't develop into a quality basketball player. And he lives off developing three-star players into four-star level talent.
Yeah, I did a whole column on at the end of Monday Musings on his two and three-stars versus his four and five-stars, and it would have been a pretty close game, honestly. Now, before we start champion three-star talent, I don't know if anybody saw Jason Tatum's tip dunk over Matt Ryan. You can recruit Jason Tatum and maybe work him into the offense, right, too. But he realistically is not going to get a lot of those guys. It would be great if they got one every 3 to 4 years, because if you put one of those, it doesn't have to be Jason Tatum, but if you put one of those type of guys in with the Demetrius Jackson team, in with this team, what if Bonzi had a, as you like to say, the bouncy athlete at 6'9", 210 coming along
That particular type of player is what you'd really like to see them get, because they can get guards, they can get shooters, he can make three-star players into 18-point-a-game scores.
Matt Farrell is just as good as all the four- and five-star guards he's going to be facing right now, the way he's developed, but it's different when you have the tall athlete.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, the 2014 class, Matt Farrell was a two-star, Bonzi Colson was a three-star, and Martin Gibb was a four-star. So, riddle me that, recruiting analysts. I'm surprised they have not cashed in on it more. They have one player in the freshman class coming in, DJ Harvey. He's a good one, but they have not signed a true big since Gibbon. I mean, that's not a good situation in terms of just roster balance.
Mooney, I mean, I guess he's like 6'8".
Yeah. But. So I thought they would cash in more. I thought that they would have found the next Zach August. A year ago.
Yeah, I agree. Bray considers Nicola Jogo as part of the freshman class next year with Harvey. And, I've talked about
him.
But
he's
also
not a 6'10 guy that can
But he is 6'7", and he's very... people are going to see two things. One, how athletic he is, and two, how well he can shoot.
It will be a big class coming up the year after Harvey. They need to hit, it really needs to be one of Bray's better classes.
It's interesting, if Mike Bray, however, tried to recruit like Duke and was 25% as successful, Notre Dame would get murdered by Duke in every game, because he would not have senior and juniors like Vastoria, Beecham, Colson, and Farrell that are good because they're older, playing against Duke's young guys. Look, Duke loses because ever, any game, because they recruit like Duke. Because Duke right now could have the starting lineup of Jahlil Okafor, Justice Winslow.
That's amazing.
Jones should still be there. Jabari Parker would be a senior. So we wouldn't know who Jason Tatum is because he'd be on LSU.
Right.
And that's just the way it goes. I mean, right. Duke, it's a different world they operate in, and he's smart to do it the way he does. He just has to. It would be great if he throws in one guy with that ability.
Mike Brady's not going to change the way he recruits, especially now, because he's emboldened by the fact that his system with his type of players works.
And I think he tries to get one of these guys once in a while. He tried for Thon Maker. Yeah, that would have been just put Thon Maker on the stage. They're the best team in the country, probably.
I guess if you're look at the Duke comparison a little bit, they need to get Emile Jefferson.
Yes.
That's who Notre Dame needs to be signing. A player of that level.
McDonald's All-American, by the way.
Who is not the level, like the one-and-done guy. Like, Tobias Harris was a guy Notre Dame really tried to take a run at. He ended up going to Tennessee. He was a one-and-done. I think he's still in the league. That was maybe 6-7 years ago. They haven't really come close. Thon Maker was one. Jared Allen was another one. He's at Texas right now. He'll be a one-and-done there. That's the kind of, they need an athletic big, really.
They would be a one or two seed if Thon Maker was on. They'd be a one seed if Thon Maker was on the team.
Jared Allen at Texas, I think they would be.
Well, Mike Brave kind of, I think it was only partly tongue in cheek when he talked about Ben Lammers. He said, I don't know who my coach was that was recruiting Texas, but I'm not sure how he missed on this guy. I think there was 50% truth to him saying that because he would look good in the middle of Notre Dame's defense.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, no question. All right, next up, CPU15. Other recruiting sites have stated that Notre Dame is taking 5 receivers in this class. I love wide receivers, but is there really room for 5?
I don't imagine that's humanly possible. There's no.
No.
There would be a lot of suspensions first.
Well, I would tell you that, according to Dell Alexander on National Signing Day, they're taking 3 or 4. So, if something's changed, I guess. But the fact that they're approaching tight ends now, I think if there was a 5th guy, he would actually be a tight end, not a wide receiver. So
that'd be 30-35% of your class.
Yeah, and look at the receiver position.
They don't lose anybody.
They're not really losing anybody. They're a little low on numbers right now. I don't think that having like 10 receivers is a great figure, but having 15 is not either for the opposite reason.
In a perfect world for Notre Dame, St. Brown could be great and leave. Then you need one other receiver, but that's a jump to be able to take off.
And maybe, just like with Elko's defense, you need fewer linebackers because of the way they play it. I mean, maybe you don't need quite as many receivers because Chip Long's going to run more multiple tight end sets.
And I think also comes down to this. What combination of players would you rather have on the field? Brock Wright and Cole Kmet, or Jafar Armstrong and Michael Young?
Yeah, I like the 2 tight ends.
Let's go with the 2 tight ends. Yeah. So I think that's part of it too. But I think that also leads to, like, if you get another tight end, could be interesting.
Air Pirate 73, if Sam Mustipher keeps on making unforced errors, how close is Tristan Hodge to being his replacement?
I mean, according to Brian Kelly last week, not that close. Because it sounds like they have full confidence in Sam Mustipher. Again, I think we've talked about it on multiple podcasts. He played last year pretty much throughout with a high ankle sprain. Wasn't a great year for him, but the coaching staff seems to have a lot of confidence in him. Talking to people behind the scenes, the issue with Hodge last year was he just wasn't getting it. I mean, the light wasn't going off in terms of this is how this all fits together. Maybe that light will go on this offseason, but if there's a position that he wins, it sounds like it's going to be right guard, not center.
Yeah, and this is something I've said through the years. I think fans have a tendency to look at a guy and say, oh, he's struggled, let's find a replacement. Coaches look at it as, we just invested 12 starts with Sam Mustipher. He's going to get better than the version we saw last year.
He did get better, too, didn't he?
He did.
They stopped airmail and stuff.
Yeah, that was just a brief couple of snaps, and one of which was highly publicized in a monsoon.
Yeah, I think Sam Mustipher, for his first year, was not terrible as much as like people on message boards like to make him out. Like,
I agree.
Like it was a total disaster. I thought he did some good things. And I think you look at him now, he's come a long way physically. He looks much more like that's what a starting center is supposed to look like at Notre Dame. You know, is he Nick Martin? No. But Nick Martin was a second round pick. I think Sam Mustipher will be a lot better this year. But I do think, look, the ankle sprain, I think to be healthy will be a huge upgrade for him because he can move and plant and pull and all those kinds of things that were a bit of a struggle.
How long have we been saying that Alex Barnes would be a better guard than tackle?
Yeah, since he got here, I think. Since they first pushed back.
Before he got here. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's the people, I don't know what it is. People
and that's not tackle, that's man. Not etched in stone because it's the spring, but I would anticipate, I'll say this, this is just my opinion. I think Tommy Kramer's a better guard than a tackle.
Yeah, I would agree with you, but they need a tackle too.
Well,
they
have to
work those guys out there.
Yeah, no, Eichenberg's out there, and they have to put Kramer there.
They have to try.
But I just think long term,
I agree.
And Alex Barnes is as big as a house, you know, wide and tall. But he just moves. He doesn't move quite well enough, I think, to be a tackle.
It's all right. You need great guards too.
Yeah, he can be a very, very good guard. I don't think that he can be
right.
a very, very good...
I think a fifth year, he'd be a really, really good guard in two years. It's amazing he's a senior, by the way. It doesn't seem like he should be a senior.
No.
Quentin Nelson, it does. We've been hearing his name forever, and everyone's thankful he's still there. But, yeah, Alex Barr, I like to move to guard, and I think it's definitely partly a spring thing, because Eichenberg and Kramer can go at it, competition, learn the position, and then they can make the decision early in August. Wash ND, at your first full media viewing, which position group are you most interested in watching?
Safeties was way more interesting than I thought. So I'll answer it that way because look, I'm watching the defensive line and quarterback like everybody else, but safeties was much more curious because Nick Coleman was running with the ones and Jalen Elliott and Devin Stutzel were running with the twos together. I think I mentioned this on the podcast last Thursday. I'm curious if the coaching staff looks at those guys as a pair and they want to develop a chemistry between them, the two of them. So they're going to run on the twos together. Or maybe they'll run on the ones together when they're back next week after spring break. So safety is much more interesting than maybe I was expecting going into that first practice.
I don't think it was. I think some were surprised that Tranquil was running at safety. And I don't think that's a surprise with the first practice because you want them to kind of start with a bit of a comfort zone and work for there. I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that he ends up at Rover? Or
yeah, I mean, well, some weeks, you know. He won't end up at Rover against Michigan State, but I don't think he's going to not be on the field.
No, I agree with that. But, I mean, one of the things that Mike Elko pointed out when we first met him was that, you know, I don't want to keep coming into the film room complaining about a guy that we keep putting in a position that he can't play.
Yeah.
And I mean, I thought, I don't think he was sending out a message, but to me, he was talking exactly about Drew Tranquil. Right?
Yes. We spent the last 2 years
talking
about
I mean, I don't think he was taking a shot at Brad Van Gorder, but like we do. But to me, that's a perfect example.
I mean, it's like, okay, the Michigan State, Boston College. I mean, even Georgia you could throw in that mix. They're more power running teams. They're probably going to have a third down at some point, right? I mean, if everything goes according to plan, they will be in third down passing situations at some point during the game. And at that point, Drew Tranquil, of the 75 snaps in the game, could still, you know, get 25, 30 of them. So it's not, if he's the Rover in third downs, that's still an important position.
I want Sean Crawford to be my on the field in third down, no matter what happens.
Yeah, that would be fine, too.
That will happen,
For me, the position group I just want to look at is, are they playing two tight ends? Or are they playing the slot?
Yeah.
I want to see if Alizé Jones is out there with Smythe. And but is Claypool rotating the slot like he did in our very brief viewing? Those are all guys that I would be very interested in.
Well, based upon some of the film that we saw from the first practice, Chase Claypool looked like a better blocking tight end than Durham Smythe.
Don't you just want to see Claypool or Jones as the second guy out there as opposed to a slot receiver for Notre Dame? I know CJ Sanders has like athletic gifts, but how can they look at that and not want to try that? It doesn't mean it has to work, but that physically imposing and everything else about it, that is just what you want to see from your offense.
Yeah, and I think there's enough flexibility in what Chip Long runs that he recognizes that and will try to maximize it and take advantage of it. Dip98 asks, if Scott Pagano goes elsewhere and Daniel Cage remains out of shape or medically unable to play, which interior defensive lineman is most likely to see the biggest increase in snaps?
Darnell Yule?
Other than Bonner and Tillery.
Yeah,
they will be playing Bonner and
Tillery. They just, watching the first practice, they just don't have a lot of options there. They're short on material. And that's, I know there's a lot of big pieces about, okay, what happens with the defensive line? How can they get more out of this position? Can they you know, scheme it up and X and O's, or is this, you know, the magic touch of Mike Elko and his defensive coordinating skills, is that going to create something that's not there? Defensive line is a position where either you have it or you don't, and I think Notre Dame is more towards the don't. I like Dalen Hayes a lot, but on the interior of the defensive line, it's just, I don't think that's a position where you're going to have an out-of-nowhere story where, like, wow, I didn't, that guy just blew me away with how good he was, because it's, you have it or you don't. I think Notre Dame's, they've got a bunch of don'ts.
You know, maybe Elijah Taylor, that would probably be one of the first names, but I mean, until a Duke Treadway.
He's never played a game. He's going to his junior year, and you got to see him on the field at some point for us to, and Tiasum's never come close to playing a game.
Right.
Yeah. And so you have to see these guys at a little point.
Your pass rush for the, you know, I know how many times. Pass rush is going to come from scheme, not an individual that's suddenly going to jump up. Your defensive linemen are going to get sacks because of the scheme, not because they suddenly became much better pass rushers.
Now, interior defensive linemen that aren't great can be good through coaching and hard work. And as we talked about, I think after last week's podcast, we're kind of talking about the same thing. I think we're going to talk about the defensive tackle and nose tackle after every podcast and during every podcast, because there's going to be a lot of questions about it. They can be solid and they can hold the point. They don't have to be difference makers. They have to do their job, hold their gap, shoot the gap, whatever they can do. What you're saying is, you know, is it just going to be bad? It doesn't have to be the mismatch of Jason Tatum dunking over Notre Dame all the time mismatch.
No.
It just has to be the, hey, this little zone is working out mismatch for Notre Dame. Like, to put it in basketball context, you look out there, Jason Tatum could do that every play. Jump over Notre Dame and shoot. But it doesn't work that way. If you play sound fundamental defense, you make him make a hard shot. In football, you don't have to be blown off the ball just because the offensive lineman's a lot better than you. You can just stay low.
It goes back to what Priester said a minute ago about Mike Elko describing Drew Tranquil. If you get frustrated as a coach because a guy is failing at a job that you're putting him in a position to fail, that's kind of on you as a coach. So if Mike Elko says, you know what, we need 12 sacks from Jerry Tillery, that's kind of on Mike Elko. I mean, they're going to have to figure out a different way to do that than asking their interior defensive linemen to be pass rushers, because there's just not a Sheldon Day on the roster right now.
Interior defensive linemen become pass rushers when you create double teams elsewhere, yeah, and an offensive lineman just has to peel off of a guy, and then he makes a sack.
Last question, SR5452. How do you guys explain guys like Pete Makwa, Elijah Taylor, Micah Dutredway, and Brandon Tiasum? Is it poor scouting, poor coaching, or both? I understand some are, in a way, young, but other programs get their young guys ready. They were all 3-star kids or higher. Do you think the new staff will get something out of them?
I think to explain it, Makwa was a late take that they were forced to kind of take. Now, Makwa, of all these guys, has probably made the most plays, 2-1, right?
Elijah Taylor.
He made a couple in the USC, or one USC and one Syracuse. Makwa made, this is a good conversation, by the way. We're in the senior and junior year. We're counting 2 plays to 1. Okay, so Taylor's made 2-3, and Makwa's made 1-2. The other two haven't played, so there is some poor coaching, scouting, development across the board here. I don't think anyone thought when they got the three together, Duke Treadway, Taylor, and Tiasum, like, yes, that's it. That's the haul they needed to solidify this inside. It was all like, we need some bodies, and maybe they can develop.
Taylor was a guy they targeted real early. Like, they liked him a lot.
But the other guys were late takes, right?
Yeah, the Mako was Makwa definitely late. Yeah. I mean, they flipped him from Rutgers. Elijah Taylor, that was a guy the staff was like, this is the guy we want. We're going to go all out after him, and they got him.
Why didn't they play him until the end of last year?
I do not understand that at all, and that was something that I think Brian Kelly basically was like, I don't know either. Duke Treadway and Tiasum were interesting because they were takes over the summer, so they were not early takes, but they're not late takes. And they took them really before other schools were getting involved. They were just strange. Duke Treadway, I think Priester and I sort of liked as a developmental guy, like a Capron Lewis Moore.
Because there's a level of athleticism there and a big body.
Good frame. We'll see.
I had no idea how to play football coming to Notre Dame, though.
He made a play in the spring game, if we're counting plays we've seen over 3 years. Remember, we were watching that in the sun, and he jumped out there.
How do you remember that?
It was the only time I've ever seen him on a football field. Yeah,
that's true.
In All-Star game, he looked at me like he had no idea how to play football. You know, and I mean, I,
Which is, no, that's not totally unique for a defensive lineman coming in
right.
at 17 just years
a raw,
old.
Yeah, it was a raw, 270-pound, 6'5 body. You knew he was going to redshirt, and he did. Then he had the injury, so we have no clue what he's... He was running with the twos last week. That is the most information that I've received about Micah Dutrueway in 2 years, is the fact that he was running with the twos. And then Brandon Tiasom, that one I just didn't really get. It was for a different defense. I think they looked at it as like, hey, we need a nose guard body. And, you know, they don't really have that. They don't really play that guy anymore. I mean, you look at it's Jerry Tillery and Jonathan Bonner. They're quicker, more athletic interior defensive linemen opposed to your 320-pound.
Right. Now, that will change with the class coming in. The freshman class coming in with Ewell and then the following class.
Yeah, those are good athletes. I mean, right. I think especially Ewell and Tagovailoa, those are good athletes for those positions.
So, well, one of those three, Mock was a senior, and the only way he's back is if he distinguishes himself because they have such a roster shrink coming for next year. Will one of those three guys be a fifth-year valuable player at Notre Dame?
I could see two of them.
That's more important.
I could see Taylor and Treadwell.
I want to say this. Of all the hundreds of film reviews I've done, some of my worst reports involve these four guys. Right?
Oh, worst as in not rosy.
Correct.
I thought you meant you've been proven wrong. I was like, well, what do you
think? No. I mean, worst.
Yeah. Highly skeptical.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Especially Makwa, who was really, really slow coming out of high school.
Yeah. And that's...
He's showing some quickness now off the snap that you never even saw that in high school.
I like Taylor. That's why I asked that question. I still think Elijah Taylor could be a player.
Yeah. He tackled Adoree Jackson. I mean, that has to count for something.
It counts for twice as much in my three-tackle thing. That's a square.
And Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe. No, it was Ronald Jones and Adoree Jackson.
That's like nine tackles. That's like nine tackles on a curve.
Yeah,
that's
no good. Question. All right, well, that's it for this week's Irish Illustrated Insider. As we mentioned, Notre Dame is on spring break. There's no spring practice to report on. Tim Priester is driving to Buffalo tomorrow.
God be with me.
So he might not be joining us on our podcast next week. But we'll be back March 20th to recap Notre Dame's first couple games in the NCAA tournament, see if they make the other Sweet 16, talk a little bit about spring practice coming back. So until March 20th, Tim Priester, Jim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, thanks for listening.
Writers from IrishIllustrated.com are now on WSBT Radio. Join Tim Priester, Pete Sampson, Tim O'Malley, and WSBT Radio's Sean Stiers for the Irish Illustrated Hour. Get the latest insight on what's happening with the Notre Dame football team, along with other Irish athletic programs, plus interviews with Notre Dame newsmakers. The Irish Illustrated Hour can be heard in March, Mondays at 7 p.m. on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.